Krishna. Nice to see some of you who are here this morning. Ready to hear more nectar?
Yeah.
Any of you think about the pastime during the day? Thank you. Can I get like a napkin or a tissue also?
No, go tissue.
Oh. Did any of you think about the Leela after we talked about it? Or was that the end of the class, the end of thinking about it?
I thought about it.
Oh, that's good.
Bouncy's with us and he didn't come this morning, so I related it to Bouncy.
Oh, that's excellent. So not only did you think about it, but you repeated it.
Not very well, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sure I tried. I'm sure you did. I'm sure it was just lovely. Anybody think about any of the points we discussed this morning? Yes, you did. Oh, so this is considerably longer. When are we going to?
You did 1:21.
As long as you like.
As long as I like. Okay. And I'd like to ask you, I know after this you go to sleep, but somehow to pick at least one or two things from here that you're going to focus on and meditate on. Wonderful pastime. We're doing about Krishna dancing on the vids of Kaliya, and it's a really wonderful lila to meditate on. So whenever you can, even if it's just for a second or two, turn on your shower. Ah, water. Krishna was dancing on Kaliya in the water. See the color red and say, "Oh yeah." There were red jewels on Kaliya's hoods, and they were reflecting off Krishna's feet, and then they fell in the blue water made purple. So anything at all that can remind you of something in the Leela. Now, we were talking about this morning how by meditating on these Leelas that Krishna performs in the material world, we're relieved of certain anarthas. Certain contaminations. Who remembers what the contamination were removed? Gets removed when meditating on Krishna swallowing the forest fire. That's the second forest fire, by the way. First forest fire is a different one. Anybody remember this morning we were saying which contamination is removed by the forest fire? Yes, the contamination of Kali. Which is, as I said, different from the first forest fire, which we did not discuss. This one is being envious of other devotees or being affected by people who are envious. Because Kaliya tries, he's trying to poison the heart of Vrindavan. So people who try to poison our hearts, or if we're envious and we try to poison somebody else's heart. Does this happen? No. So we don't need to read this for that purpose. So, unfortunately, right, there are people, do you know what this person did? So both Kaliya and Agastura are in the form of snakes, and they're reading about either of those Leelas helps free us from those same anarthas, but Kaliya is particularly interested in poisoning the hearts of the devotees with envy and malice. So just like if ever we feel ourselves attracted by the aspects of Kali Yuga, we can remember, oh, Krishna swallowed the fire, Krishna swallowed the fire. And if ever we find that our mind and heart is going towards envy or criticism of other devotees, we can remember, oh, Krishna danced on Kaliya. I love this story. It's actually one of my favorite stories. So Kaliya, Iya means belonging to, living in. And Kala means black, cobra, night, iron, abuse, and defamation. So living in abuse and defamation. By the way, being envious is at the root of our material attachment, so this is a really good lila for getting rid of the very bottom of the root of that huge banyan tree. Alright, so we start off this pastime with Krishna went to the Yamuna without Rama, or says in Bhagavatam, is without Rama. So this can mean without happiness. Because this in this lila, Krishna gives distress to his devotees by being wrapped up in Kaliya. It also means without Balaram, because Balaram would have stopped Krishna from going in. That was his business, to protect Krishna. Balaram was kept home to observe a function. Now, another reason that Balaram might not have gone is a little esoteric. So in the Brahma Vivarta Purana, it says that Anantisesha's disciple was Kaliya. So Kaliya's the disciple of Balaram, Balaram in another form, and he's fallen by the wayside and he's getting chastised by Krishna. And it wouldn't be so pleasant for Balaram to see. Just like Balaram didn't like to see Bhima fighting with Duryodhan, who was also his disciple. So nobody wants to see their child or student getting in trouble with somebody else, getting in trouble with their boss, basically. So Krishna was feeling really satisfied by killing Dainagasura, and he wanted to celebrate. And just like we like to celebrate with music and dancing, so Krishna wanted to celebrate with some dancing. Now this lila happened in the summer, just like the one that we read this morning also happened in the summer. And everybody was very thirsty. So they went to this lake in the Yamuna. Now they all must have drunk the water at the same time, because otherwise, once the boys saw that the cows had died, they wouldn't have drunk also. But they were very, very thirsty, so all drunk together. Or it's possible that the boys were so distraught at the death of their animals that they didn't care anymore about their own life and they went to drink. Now, apparently they were dead, although, after drinking from this poisonous water, although they all had a spiritual body, so they can't die. So they were apparently dead. And Krishna worried for a moment, which is always interesting. You know, if you're all-powerful and you're omniscient, why should you ever worry? We were talking this morning about how adventure, if you know you're safe, that adventure and anxiety can just be pleasurable. Just like if you're reading a scary book or adventuresome book or adventuresome film, and you're safe in your chair and you feel safe, but you're getting some thrill from the adventure. So you have the simultaneous feeling of safety and peace and thrill and adventure at the same time. So Krishna likes this also. It's not just that the devotees like this, that Krishna's going to save me, but Krishna also likes this thrill. What am I going to do? And then he brings them back to life. And he brought them back by, how did he bring them back? By? What did he do to bring the boys and cows back to life? No. He looked at them. He looked at them. Now, he could have just desired. He could have just thought, I want them to come back to life. But because they're very special devotees, he wanted to look at them. And he looked at each one individually and brought each back individually so that he could relish that relationship with each one of them as they came back to consciousness. And it was, Jiva Goswami says that his glance, when he looked at them, it was really like his heart melting, and his melting heart came out through his eyes as tears, which is what revived each of them. So the personification of Krishna's love for each of these devotees. And as each of the cowherd boys and the cows came back to life, they looked at Krishna with amazement. Krishna just saved my life. And they realized that the cause of their good fortune was the glance of Krishna. So that's true for all of us, that the cause of our good fortune is the glance of Krishna. Now, Kaliya is a black serpent, meaning full of poison. Not necessarily the color, but that he's full of poison. Now, he's the son of Kadru. One of Kadru is one of the wives of Kasyapa Muni, who populated the whole universe. Kasyapa Muni has another wife called Tarka. Do you know who her son is? Garuda. So Kali and Garuda are What's their relationship? Stepbrothers. Half-brothers. Half-brothers. Same father, different mothers. All right. So Kali, the son of Kadru, was in a lake in the Yamuna, and he was hiding for many yugas from Garuda, the son of Tarksha. He was hiding from his half-brother. It says, according to the Garga Samhita, in his last life, in Swayambhuva Manu, that Kali was a sage named Vedashira, who was cursed for not allowing the sage Ashvashira to meditate in his ashram. And Ashvashira said, "You're angry for no reason. You hiss just like a snake. Become a snake." Then Lord Vishnu appeared and said, "Don't worry, I'll come and put my feet on your head." So then Vedashira took birth from Daksha's daughter, Kadru, who married Kasyapa. So as we said, Kali and Garuda are brothers. They're half-brothers. And Kaliya thought, why does Garuda always get to carry the Lord? What about me? I wish I could get to be the Lord's carrier also. Now, this lake in which Kaliya was living had to be separate from the river, if you're familiar with the geography of rivers. So as rivers, when the rivers start, they're flowing very fast, and they tend to flow in a fairly straight line. And gradually, and they're picking up silt and soil as they flow. And as they get closer to the ocean, generally the land gets a little flatter, and also the river gets much heavier from carrying the soil. So mountain rivers tend to be very clear. When they get closer to the ocean, they get cloudier. So as the river Jamuna is coming down, it's getting heavier and cloudier, and it's going more slowly. And as the river goes slowly, it weaves more. When it's up in the mountain, it's going more straight, it's going with great force. And as it weaves and changes its path, some parts of the river can get cut off from the main stream. So you can have, you know, it kind of goes this way, and parts of it go this way. And it can form what's called an oxbow, which is when you have just like a semicircle, like a sea, that's cut off from the main stream. And sometimes it forms a whole lake that's cut off from the main stream. So this was a lake, and the lake had to be cut off from the rest of the Jamuna, because otherwise everybody in Mathura would also have died from the poison. So it must not have been going through the main flow. And it was a very deep lake. There's actually the word for this lake and the word for heart in Sanskrit. It's very similar. So this lake was like the heart of Vrindavan. In fact, all of Yamuna is the heart of Vrindavan, which is one thing in reading this story, we really think how sad it is that right now the Yamuna is being diverted and there's no Yamuna water coming into Vrindavan at all. If you go to the Yamuna, there's something flowing in the bed of the Yamuna, but it's not the Yamuna. And then it said that Kaliya had made the water by his mystic power. He'd made the water into solid objects. So he made a whole city in the bottom of the lake. Now we said Kali had been there for yugas, so why did Krishna wait so long to deal with him? Well, one reason is, according to the Gopalchampu, that Yasoda had told him to stay away from this lake. Don't go there, it's poisonous. So why did Krishna disobey today? Well, first of all, Balaram wasn't there, so he decided he was going to do something naughty. And also, Balaram had told him that if the cows go there, you're going to have to go there to take care of the cows, and the cows had wandered off there. Another reason Krishna hadn't gone there earlier is he felt a little shy in front of the Nagapatnis, who were his great devotees. So the whole area was contaminated. There was poisonous vapor 24 hours a day, and the water was boiling from the poison, and there was dense fat smoke, as we sometimes see like in oil refineries coming out of the water. And birds would fall in the water. Kali really didn't like birds, because he headed in for Garuda, who was the king of the birds. So he particularly was going after those birds. And the trees and the grass in the area around the lake had all died. This whole lake was just basically deadly. And even the immortal Amara demigods, they had to stay at least 8 miles away. So even drinking their somaras and their long life wouldn't protect them against the poison of Kaliya. Now, there were lots and lots of other snakes living there, so the whole area was full of snake holes. And Kali as poison in the Yamuna was like an incurable heart disease. And Jamuna Devi also, she felt like she had a black ball of fire in her belly. If you've ever been really sick and you felt like your belly was on fire. So that's what Jamuna felt like. Actually, water is health. How can you have any health without water? So the Jamuna is the health of the Vrindavan and the health of the devotees. Now, this lake looked very beautiful with the poison. The waves had kind of a radiance of crimson and gold. They looked like ocean waves looking in the moonlight. So that was very deadly. There was also some beauty. So now Krishna's brought all his friends and cows back to life. And he decides that he's going to go and deal with Kaliya. So he climbs a kadamba tree, which has these round yellow flowers. And it was the only tree in the area that was alive. So either Garuda, knowing that Krishna would climb on this tree later, put some nectar on the tree to preserve it, or as soon as Krishna's lotus feet touched the tree, it immediately became alive. Think about the story of Varaha killing Hiranyaka, and after Hiranyaka was dead, after his soul had left the body, because Lord Varaha's lotus feet were touching the dead body, it looked rosy, like full of life, because the super soul, the soul of all souls, the life of all life, was touching him. Now, when Krishna goes up on the tree, he told his friends, I just want to see what's going on. Because if he told his friends that he was going to jump, they would have tried to stop him or they would have come after him. Similar reason to why he asked them to close their eyes. And when Krishna goes up on the tree, now, Krishna is, one of his qualities is that he's a very careful and excellent dresser. Right? In our lives, we know some people who are really excellent in how they dress, and other people who, you know, it's like they took their clothes when they were wet and put them in a ball and threw it in the drawer and put it on any old way. But Krishna's a very expert dresser, and before he jumped in the water to fight with Kaliya, he arranged his belt, and he took his curls and he put them up in his turban and he retied his turban and he wanted to make sure, you know, that he looked really, really nice for his battle with Kaliya. Then he tells his friends, as Krishna often does, don't worry. Don't have any fear. Please watch the cows. And he smiled. Then, flapped his arms, you know, like he was about to wrestle. And he jumps in the water. So just a little boy, and he jumps in this big lake. But when he did, it was like some huge object had fallen in the water. And this poisonous, bubbling, foaming water, it starts moving. It said 100 bow lengths, so about 100. Do you have yards in this country? You never can figure out your measurement system in this country. Do you have yards or meters? I don't know what you have. So yards or meters, 100 of them. And so the boys and the cows, immediately they just ran away because this water was coming out. It was poisonous water for such a long distance. And Krishna, who's the source of Ananta, the original serpent, of course, he's not affected by the poison. So I want you to just picture this for a minute. Krishna jumps into this lake, which is bubbling with poison and fire and killing everything. And he's just playing. And he's just swimming around, and he makes a huge noise by splashing the water. And actually, the noises he made by splashing the water sounded like music. He was creating music as he was splashing this bubbling, foaming, smoking water around. And he dove deep into the lake like he was going to Patala Loka. And as he was making this noise and splashing the water would burst into flames because of the poison. Like sometimes we've seen when there's oil spills on the water, and so the water can, there can be flames in the water. I like that. So Kaliya thought, my home is under attack. You know, we often think like this. We have some anarta in our heart. We chant Hare Krishna, we're reading the books. Krishna starts appearing in our heart and starts cleaning up, and we just get angry. I mean, does this only happen to me? Yeah, what are you doing taking my anartas? What are our anartas? Our anartas are things that are killing us, and we love them. It's just like some people keep very dangerous pets. You ever read about this in the news? You know, man killed by pet python. Right? They're keeping, oh, my dear python. I love my python. No one kills him. Sometimes it even happens with people's dogs. I know several cases where dogs didn't kill their owners, but they maimed them. And I know these two devoted kids who had their, you know, really severe damage done by a dog and went after their face. The people are thinking, oh, this is my dear pet tiger. There was a big thing in the news years ago in America about some entertainers who worked with tigers. And one day one of the tigers attacked one of them on stage. Yeah. I don't remember the names of the guys, but anyway. Really severely injured them. So that's exactly what our anartas are like. Anarta means something that's not wanted. Arta means something, it can mean wealth, something that's useful, something that you want to gain. And anarta is something that's useless or harmful. But we're thinking they're very nice. Krishna says, Kama Ashrita. He says the demons take shelter of lust, or Ahankara Ashrita. They actually think it's our shelter. And this is a kind of a hard thing to get your head around, but we think that our material attachments, we like them. We're attached to them because we're holding on to them. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that it's like we're hugging a tree. And we say, I don't want to, you know, have the tree let go of me. But I'm hugging it. We're not victims. We're not victims of Maya. You might think I'm a victim of Maya. It's not true. We're taking our attachments and we're holding on to them and saying, I like it, and it's biting us and it's pinching us and it's causing all this trouble, and we're thinking, I like it. And even when we're praying to Krishna, you know, when Krishna tries to take away our anartas, we often complain. Or when some other devotee says, hey, you know, you really have this problem. What do you mean I have this problem? So I had a friend years ago who asked me, what's my biggest problem? And I said, you don't have any problems. And she kept pushing and she said, no, really, what's my biggest problem? And I said, I don't think you have any problems. So after about a week or two of her pushing me, I finally said, well, I don't know, maybe you have a small problem. Well, what is it? What is it? I said, it really, you know, it's just so small, it's not even important. Just let's forget about it, okay? And she kept pushing, and finally I said, all right, I shouldn't have done it. But against my better judgment, I said, well, you know, you're really wonderful in all these respects, but there's this one thing. Oh, my goodness. You know, for the next 3 weeks, I was getting emails and phone calls. How dare you say that? All right, Krishna. So this is our tendency. Actually, Kaliya was suffering. I mean, how happy are you going to be if anyone who tries to get near you dies? Yeah. And you can only be with other envious creatures. You're going to be pretty miserable. So actually his situation was miserable, and Krishna was coming to purify him and give him joy. But when he sees Krishna, he just becomes angry. It's a great catastrophe out there, Prabhu. It's really severe problems. Don't worry about it. It's I want that toy and that person has it. That's all that's going on. Okay. Nobody's hurt. Okay. It's amazing how when we're children we think those things are so important. You know, and frankly, I'm sure the demigods look at us and all the things we think are important and they feel exactly the same way. I'm just like, what are they fussing about? You know, so when Kaliya saw Krishna, instead of saying, Oh, Krishna's coming to help me. Krishna's coming to purify me. Let me surrender to him. He became angry. Sometimes we also think, well, it's Krishna's fault that I'm not Krishna conscious because I can't see him. And if I could see him naturally, I'd become attracted to him and I'd give up everything else. So it's just that Krishna's not showing up. It's his fault. Sometimes we think like this. If only Krishna would reciprocate with me more, then I'd be Krishna conscious. Why is he hiding from me? Why is he not showing himself to me? Well, you know what? Even if he shows himself to us, if we're in materialistic consciousness, we may just become angry. So Kaliya saw Krishna. And he saw how beautiful Krishna was. He saw Krishna's legs like lotus flowers. He saw his Sri Vatsamar. He saw all of his jewels and his yellow garments and how Krishna was playing with great strength. Unparalleled beauty. And all he felt was, I'll crush him. This reminds us of the story when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had his 21 hours of ecstasy where he was displaying himself as Vishnu. And he finally got what he wanted. Yeah. And he was saying, anybody can have whatever benediction they want. And then someone said, what about Mukunda? He's not here. And Mahaprabhu said, I don't want to see Mukunda. Why? What's wrong with Mukunda? Well, he says he's a devotee one day and then he converts with the Mayavadis the next day. So I don't know what he is. And then they told Mukunda, Lord doesn't want to see you. And he said, well, will I ever be able to see you? And they asked the Lord, will Mukunda ever be able to see you? In 10 million bursts, then I'll see you. He took the message. And Mukunda started dancing. I will see him, I will see him, I will see him. They told the Lord, Mukunda's dancing. He's dancing? I just said I wouldn't see him for 10 million bursts. He's saying, eventually I'll see him. He said, okay, bring him in. Now when Mukunda came in, Mukunda said, actually, my dear Lord, seeing you is not the real benediction. And he told many stories of persons who saw the Lord. So Kaliya saw the Lord, but because he didn't have a service attitude, because he had the wrong attitude, it didn't really benefit him, at least not directly. It's very interesting. Mahaprabhu tells the story of the washerman in Mathura. Did you ever wonder why Krishna got so angry at that washerman in Mathura? Did it ever seem to you that it was not quite kind of fitting? Yeah, a bit much. Please give me some clothes. No. So Mahaprabhu tells in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Mahaprabhu tells the story that that living entity for millions of births did austerities. I want to see God. Now, why did it take him millions of births? Because he had the wrong mentality. But for millions of births, he did austerities. I want to see God. I want to see God. So finally, he gets to be born in Mathura. Because he had the wrong mentality, he was born as a washerman working for Kamsa. But his austerities finally paid off. So Krishna's millions of births you wanted to see me. Here I am. Now do something for me. A little something. Give me a little cloth. No. You can understand that. So the point is just seeing Krishna isn't enough. Actually serving Krishna is much higher than seeing Krishna. So Kaliya felt great anger. He bit Krishna on the chest and he grabbed Krishna in his coils for 48 hours, or Prabhupada says 48 minutes, or sometimes it says 2 hours. So different places it says 2 hours or 48 minutes. And Kaliya was wondering, who is this Krishna? Now, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that all of Kaliya's friends and relatives also bit Krishna at the same time. He was attacked from all sides at once, and then bound in these coils. Now, Krishna stayed motionless for all this time, somewhere between 48 minutes and 2 hours. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur said that this was Krishna saying, okay, show me all your strength, Kaliya, and then I'll show you mine. A similar thing happened with Prajumna and Daruka at the Battle of Shalva. And Sanatana says that Krishna stayed for a long time in Kaliya's coils because he felt that Kaliya was embracing him out of love. Remember, Kaliya is actually a devotee, fallen devotee. And it's also said that Yogavaya created a shield so that Krishna wasn't hurt by this squeezing of Kaliya. All right. So now let's go to the bank of this river. And we can be among the cowherd boys or the cows. And we're watching this whole scene. So we've died from the poison. Krishna brought us back to life. Then Krishna got up on the tree and he jumped in. He jumped in and now he's been bitten. And now he's in the coils. So there were cowherd men. There were some local farmers who came. Some of the cowherd men were also there. And mostly it was the cowherd boys and the animals. And they were all just, they were so afraid, they were just stunned. They couldn't move. Now it's really interesting, it says that they dedicated everything, their lives, their property, their relatives, their affection to Krishna. And they were devastated that, Krishna might die. So this is one of the secrets to becoming Krishna conscious. Where does our attachment go? Krishna says, 7.1, Prabhupada's most quoted verse from the Shastra. Maya Shakta Manaparta. Think of me with attachment. So what do we think about? We think about our attachments. Pay attention to what you think about during the day. I will guarantee you, you think about your attachments. Attachment means something, someone, some activity, a possession, a person, an activity, a circumstance that I'm taking as a shelter. That I'm taking this person or this group of people or this situation or this possession is going to make me complete. It's going to meet my needs. It's going to bring me happiness. It's going to bring me safety. It's going to bring me knowledge. It's going to bring me excitement. It's going to bring me love. It's going to bring me a sense of, freedom. You know, psychologists list all of the human needs, which you can see anything except like the gross physiological needs. You can see that they have their origin in the spiritual. But we're thinking, you know, this is my shelter. And the Bhagavatam calls all these shelters what? What's the term the Bhagavatam uses? Fallible soldiers. It's like I had a cousin who always played with little plastic soldiers. So I wasn't really into soldier playing, but when we visited his house, if I wanted to play with my cousin, I had to play with the soldiers. So, you know, little plastic soldiers, what are they going to do for you? There was some Chinese emperor who made clay soldiers, right? And they discovered them under the ground. Can you imagine just surrounding your house with clay soldiers or plastic soldiers? I mean, but even human soldiers, they're fallible. You know, in Somalia, they haven't had a tourist for 14 years. Such a dangerous place. And there's a hotel there, and they say, if you come to our hotel, we suggest you have 10 armed guards accompanying you from the airport to the hotel. But that doesn't always work. Even if you have your 10 armed guards, maybe you'll get kidnapped. Fallible soldiers. So all of our shelters are fallible. I mean, think of people who look to me as a shelter, right? Just don't all of us have somebody who think that you're going to save them? Can we save them? Can we save our children from crying over their toys? You're thinking, I want my child always to be happy, but sometimes they're miserable. And there's nothing you can do about it. They're just miserable. I can't really give shelter to anybody. I can't even give shelter to myself. Can I prevent myself from having any kind of misery? I mean, I can try. I haven't been terribly successful at it. So our attachment goes to our shelters, our investments. They've invested everything in Krishna. So we should invest everything in Krishna. He's our real shelter. Otherwise, if we make investments, I'm not talking about literally you can't put your money in the bank. But don't put your heart in the bank. Don't put your heart in the government. Don't put your heart in your family as a shelter. and take care of your family as a service, not as a shelter. I mean, we can do whatever we want, but if we take our family as a shelter, we'll suffer. And they'll suffer by us trying to deal with them as if they're a shelter, because they're not. So they were devastated. You might say, well, what's the use of having Krishna as a shelter? You also get devastated. But again, this is, it's lila. It's sweet. It's something like how people feel when Superman gets tied up in the movie. They know he's going to get out, but you're still in anxiety. Does that make sense to everybody? You know, you're reading the book, you're watching the film about the hero. You know the hero. You know they have to because they're going to make a sequel or something. So you know he's going to live. But still there's anxiety. But it's fun anxiety. Otherwise, why would people pay to experience it? People are going to so much trouble and paying their hard-earned money to experience this anxiety. Because it's fun. Of course, materially, it's not terribly fun. Nothing's terribly fun materially. But there's some pleasure in it. Prabhupada says there's nothing except for the 12 rasas, and everything we're trying to enjoy is some form of these 12 rasas. So there's also some grief. But that's the proper form of grief. That Krishna, the love of my life, in whom I've invested everything, he's in the coils of Kaliya. So the cows, the bulls, the calves, all the animals, they were crying with loud noises. They were stunned on the bank. The cowherd boys and whatever adults were there, their bodily colors faded. They produced gurgling sounds and they fell down on the ground. So why didn't they follow Krishna into the Jamuna? Because when they started to go, they saw the cows were going to follow them into the water, and they had to protect their cows. Then there were ill omens. So most of the residents of Vrindavan are not there with Krishna. But there start being ill omens on the earth, the water, and the sky. There were jackals were howling, and there was little earth tremors. Meteors fell. The sky was full with smoke, and there was dust, and there was high winds. And people's bodies were shivering. So how can there be any ill omens when Krishna's around? So it says this is a sign of the affection of the demigods. And demigods had such affection for Krishna that they were causing these. They were crying. Also was a symptom of the affection of the residents of Vrindavan. And it was also to show how evil Kaliya was. Because Krishna was going to have to throw him out of Vrindavan. And the residents of Vrindavan, they never want anybody to get thrown out of Vrindavan. So Krishna wanted to convince them. Also to convince everybody to go there and witness this pastime. Also the demigods did this because all the boys were stunned and they couldn't go back and tell anybody to come. So the demigods were sending some signs everybody would go. So when all these ill omens came, the cowherd men became filled with fear. And they were starting to discuss, well, where's Krishna? Oh, Balaram didn't go. Oh, now they were in more anxiety. And their anxiety was building and building and building. Remember, this is an anxiety of love. So you're talking about this morning, how in our human relationships, the intensity of love we feel for someone generally fades over time. But with Krishna, we don't like that. We'd like to have love with another jiva that keeps increasing. I mean, sometimes it does. It says with Usha and Aniruddha that their love kept growing every day. Or with Priyavrata and Vahirshmati, I think, that their love kept growing every day. But generally it's not like that. But that's what we want. We want a relationship where our love and affection keeps increasing. So this sort of increasing anxiety is an anxiety of love and affection. Okay, so this is now the cowherd men and the cowherd women back in the village. They also are feeling this way. We've invested everything in Krishna. If Krishna dies, we have nothing left. Like a person may invest all of their wealth in one stock, you know, and if that fails, they're finished. So they haven't hedged their bets. You know, most religious people in the material world hedge their bets. Do you understand? They don't put everything in one place. They don't put everything in Krishna. It's like they have, you know, their life is like this. Okay, this much is for God. this is for my family, this is for my work, this is for my entertainment. Just give pure peace to God. I don't want to give everything to God. The residents of Vrindavan have given everything to Krishna. So when Krishna's in trouble, they're completely devastated. You know, whereas otherwise we may think, oh, Krishna's in trouble, oh, I have something else. Our Krishna consciousness doesn't work out. I have something else I can fall back on. No, but they're everything for Krishna. So everyone in Vrindavan came together. And they were all of them were in this mood that Krishna is our everything. Bhaktivinoda Thakura is such a nice, actually two nice poems. One in Manasa Dehagaya where he says, Janaka Janani Daika Tanai Prabhu Guru Patituhu Sarvamoy. You're my mother, my father, my husband, my son, my guru, everything. So all the residents, all the different animals were there, the children, the old people, the men, the women, all living entities gathered in the village of Rajo. Has something happened to Krishna? Has something happened to Krishna? Now one person was not upset. Who was that? Balaram. So he was either smiling, laughing, or silent during this whole, when everybody is losing it. So why was he smiling or laughing or silent? Because he was trying to show everybody there's nothing to be afraid of. Don't die. Because they were at the point of death. And also to respect their love. He was respecting their love and still giving them also the don't be afraid. Also, he was laughing because he thought, boy, in my form as a nun today, if Krishna doesn't play with me, he just lies on me. And here he's playing with this jiva slip. Now, he also asked Rohini to stay back and cook. Said, you don't go. Now, we don't know if Rohini comes later. But guess who Rohini is in another life? Do you know who the mother of Anantasesha is? Kadru, who's also the mother of Kaliya. So also, Balaram and Kaliya are also brothers. And so, of course, Kadru, the mother of Anantasesha, is also Rohini. So she might not like it to see Krishna fighting with Kaliya, who's her son in another life. All right, so all the residents of Vrindavan, they all go there to this lake. Ah, by the way, that's from the Garga Samhita, and also mentioning the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So they're going there to this lake in the Jamuna, and as they're going, they're crying so much that it's making the path muddy. Have you ever cried that much? Maybe we've cried enough so that our clothes get a little wet. But could you imagine crying so much that the path you're walking on gets muddy? So it was very hard to walk because it was so muddy they kept slipping. So it was hard to walk because they were crying so much they couldn't see where they were going. And they also made the path muddy so they were slipping. But they carefully walked around Krishna's footprints. They didn't get those muddy. How were Krishna's footprints still there? Because all the boys and the animal, everybody in Vrindavan would make sure to walk around Krishna's footprints. So even though Krishna had gone there with the cows and the cowherd boys, you could still see Krishna's footprints. And of all the residents, the young gopis were the last to get there because they were crying the most. And also they kept fainting over and over again on the way. And they were falling over and over again. So their jewelry was broken. Their bangles were broken, and their necklaces were broken from falling over and over again. So it says that Sukadeva Goswami gave a very limited description. You find more description from the Goswamis because the whole thing was so painful for him that he didn't want to describe all of the details. So when the residents got there and they saw Krishna and Kaliya's coils, they were asking, how did this happen? You know, did the snake like reach up out of the water and grab Krishna and pull him in? Did Krishna voluntarily go in? But the boys were so stunned. You know, a lot of them were just lying unconscious on the ground. The others were just standing there and they didn't answer. And of course, when they didn't answer, the people got more upset. And Balaram is still smiling in them. Now everyone, especially the young gopis, they're remembering, oh, how did Krishna smile? How did Krishna talk? What did Krishna do? And they saw the world as vacant. So Prabhupada discusses that this is also an illusion. The world isn't vacant. It's full of so many things, so many people. So if you think the world is empty, then you're an illusion. So there's some parallel even to the so-called negative things of this world. They exist in some transcendental form in reality. So there's a kind of yogamaya loving illusion. Of course, we imitate this. I mean, I remember when I was young, there was a song like this, "My World is Empty Without You." But again, that's just, it's almost just like a parody of love. People may sing songs like that. You know, "My world is empty without you," or "There's not a mountain too high or a river too wide that'll keep me from getting to you. You know, I'll do anything for you. I'll love you forever." But all these songs, "As long as the stars shine." But it's not true. It's not true. If you love someone in this world, there will be a mountain too high or a river too wide that you will stop loving. The world will not seem vacant without that person. You have so many other interests. You're not going to love that person eternally. But with Krishna, it's actually true. So that's, we're longing for this. We're longing for a love so great. You know, the brain has the capacity to shut out things that are not important. We actually have that capacity. We can do that. You don't have to be distracted by a crying baby. Babies cry. It's just what they do. It's their dharma, and it's just, it's okay. It's not hurt. Why does Krishna not fulfill all of our prayers? You know, what good parent gives their kid anything they want just because they swing it? And the kid doesn't appreciate it, right? The kid is just thinking, "My dad, mommy doesn't give me everything I want." And they think like that about Krishna. So this love we're looking for in this world, the love we sing about, the love we poeticize, the love we're hankering for, it doesn't exist when you're materially conditioned, but it does exist with Krishna. So Yasoda really wants to go in, and her friends stop her. And then she faints, and her friends revive her by talking about Krishna's other pastimes, especially other demons that he's killed. "Don't worry, he's killed this demon and that demon and this other demon. I'm sure he'll be just fine." And actually, they were almost as aggrieved as Yasoda, but to serve Yasoda, they were talking to her like this. And
Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to one of my god sisters, Sumati, and he said, "When we chant Hare Krishna, we should chant just like Mother Yasoda was crying when she saw Krishna in the coils of Kaliya." So the Nandamaraj and his friends, they want to enter the Jumuna. "Let me save Krishna." But Balaram stops them, and some of the acharyas say he stopped them with a smile. Some of them say he stopped them physically, and some say he stopped them by discussing Garga Muni's predictions of Krishna's strength. And then Nanda talks to Yasoda and says, "You know, Krishna's going to die. It'd be better for us to just go in the Jumuna and die with him." And eventually, people just are sprawled on the ground in complete anguish, unable to function. And pretty much they're at the point now of death. So then Balaram says, "Krishna's powerful," and he speaks to Krishna. And he says, "Oh, Krishna, Krishna, these people are not your associates in Vaikuntha. They're not your monkey associates. They're not the Yadavas. They are the people of Raja. You are their only life and soul, and they're dying now. Lord, I have no power to save them. They're now lifeless. Merciful Krishna, only friend of the people of Raja, please give up this pastime, or your gentle heart will be filled with grief."
Krishna, they're all going to die. You'll be grieved. So then, as soon as Balaram said that, Krishna freed himself and expanded himself in Kaliya. He just made his body bigger, and Kaliya couldn't take the strain, and his coil slackened, and he had to let Krishna go. He didn't have an option. And then as soon as Krishna came out, he gave a smile to his devotees. Kaliya got even angrier, although Sanatana Goswami says he was exhibiting the sattvika bhavs of ecstasy from having touched Krishna for so long. But he got very angry. He expanded his hoods. He exhaled poisonous fumes from his nostrils, which looked like big vats. His eyes were blazing full of poison, and flames were coming out of his mouth. And he stayed still for a while, looking at Krishna. And he was licking his lips with his bifurcated tongues. Then Krishna played with him, just like a cat plays with a mouse, or Garuda plays with a snake. And Krishna starts going in a circle. And Kaliya tries to bite Krishna, but Krishna moved around him, so they were following each other in a circle until Kaliya got tired and his strength diminished. Could we take the bubbling into the veranda? Yeah, you can play with it in there. It's not going to go away. So just like that, if somebody tries to criticize devotees and poison our hearts, we should just kind of move in a circle away from them until they get tired. Just keep moving away from them. Circle around it. So they get tired and leave you alone. So Krishna was circling, Kali was circling, Krishna was going the opposite direction. You just have to circle in the opposite direction. Then Kali bit Krishna on the leg. And Rupa Goswami in the Nectar Devotion says that Garuda, who was watching this from a distance, he said, "Because my Lord has been insulted by this snake, I wish to eat this snake immediately. But I can't do so in the presence of my Lord because he'll become angry with me." So he desisted. So then, Krishna pressed down on Kaliya's hoods and jumped up on top and pushed Kaliya down like he forces everyone to surrender at death. And then again, he fixed his clothes. Because I got messed up when Kali was holding him, you know. So.
Put the curls back up. Turban.
I'm all set for my dancing performance. And as Krishna was dancing, so the snake had fire, but Krishna's jewels were sparkling more than the fire of the snake. And Krishna's feet are already red, and Kaliya's jewels on the top of his hands were red, and they were reflecting and making Krishna's feet appear even more reddish. And the red jewels, as Krishna was dancing, he was kicking the jewels, and he kicked the jewels off Kaliya's hands, and they fell into the blue water, and they turned the water purple. And Krishna was dancing on his hands back and forth. So now, you know, we're amazed at someone dancing. So this is a moving stage. And not only moving, but it's a snake and in the water. So the surface is going to be very slippery. And then Kali is trying to kill him. It's not like, you know, sometimes you see some really amazing acrobatic performances where someone's balancing someone else on their head and things like that. But they're cooperating. So Kali is not cooperating. He's trying to kill him. Not just even trying to make him fall, he's trying to kill him. And still Krishna is dancing. So Krishna was also attracting the young gopis who were at the preliminary stage of love. You know, that's how men try to attract girls, by showing off. See how strong I am. Actually, Krishna also tries to attract the gopis by how he milks the cows. So when he's milking the cows, they're watching, and they tell their parents, "Krishna's a really great cow milker. We should bring him over to our house to milk our cows." that's what they do, you know. Just like if you're looking for a nice husband for your daughter, you look for somebody who can make some money, you know, who's very good in their profession. But that was their profession, was taking care of the cows. So expert, taking care of the cows. Now, Sanatana Goswami says that Krishna might have brought the gopis up on top of Kaliya to dance with him, although no one else saw this. So if you want Krishna's gopis, you can dance with him on the Kaliya. That would be rather exciting. Now, if we have our own pride and envy, Krishna can also push down our own pride and envy, right? If we surround ourselves with the holy name and tire out the critical mind. So as Krishna's dancing, first there was no audible music. First there was only music in his mind. I saw someone like this in the shop the other day. You know, some guy working in a shop. He didn't even have any of those, you know, earbuds in. So first that was like Krishna, he's dancing. But the demigods are noticing that Krishna's dancing. So they come and they start playing music. And they notice that Krishna's doing fast dances, slow dances, and medium dances. So they're trying to keep their music in pace. And sometimes they can do it, and sometimes Krishna's dancing is such that they just become bewildered. And the demigods keep doing new melodies, and Krishna will keep pace, but then Krishna does some amazing dance they've never seen before, and they don't know how to accompany it. And some of the demigods try to dance with Krishna. Some of the Gandharvas and the Apsaras, they're trying to dance in the sky in synchrony, but they just can't. They can't match what he's doing. So they end up doing, instead of synchronized dancing, they're doing complementary dancing. That's the best they can do. They're doing something that's in harmony, but not the same thing. And flowers keep falling from the sky as Krishna's dancing. So the demigods are throwing the flowers. And they're also beating drums and playing flutes and singing various songs, so it's a whole party. And Balaram then looks at the devotees, and, you know, they're still a little worried. And he says, don't worry. He says, Krishna's doing this just to please you, just to give you pleasure. Just like when you entertain, when your people are entertaining, why are they doing it? To please the audience. I remember really noticing this when we were in Russia, at the end of the big festival in Russia. There's this team of devotees, it's mostly a family, who does a fireworks dance. And unfortunately, they can't take it out of Russia because they can't take their paraphernalia across the border, any border. But they have costumes that have actual fireworks, no joke, coming out of their shoulders and their helmets. Real, honest-to-goodness fireworks. Plus, they do this at night, and their costumes also have lights on them. And then they're twirling batons that have real fireworks. Really, coming out of the ends of their batons as they're twirling it around. It's pretty amazing. So you think, you know, why are they doing this? And after the show, they come up to you and they say, did you like it? And I remember when I was hearing them say that, I thought, that's why we do things. We do things to please others. So Krishna, Balaram saying, Krishna's doing this dance. You know, this was fire. Again, this devotee's doing this firework dance. It's a team and they cooperate. But here Kaliya is not cooperating. Balaram saying, he's doing this to please you. Don't worry. And Balaram, as the ultimate guru, he's holding back the devotees. Don't get involved. Let Krishna take care of this. So also, this demon of envy, only Krishna can take care of it. We shouldn't try to go fix other people of their envy. Just avoid. Let Krishna destroy. And Balaram's saying, oh, Krishna, he just wants to diminish the brilliance of Kaliya's jewels with the brilliance of his own lotus feet. And the devotees started to relax. And they started to laugh. Although they still had some anxiety. And Kali wasn't finished yet. They still had some anxiety, but they're starting to relax and laugh and feel that their life is getting back. And as Krishna sees them laughing and enjoying his dancing, he looks at them from the corners of his eyes with great love. So as Krishna dances on one hood, Kaliya puts up another hood and tries to push Krishna down. And Krishna controlled the 101 main hoods of Kali. Kali had 1,000 hoods by dashing him with his feet. And Prabhupada says Krishna might have expanded himself to do this. Then Kali at a certain point goes from being on the offensive to being on the defensive. So first he's trying to kill Krishna, now he's just trying to stay alive. And now, instead of vomiting fire, he's vomiting regular vomit, and he's breathing out fire. Although he's still angry, and he's still trying to raise, but he's becoming exhausted. And this looked like it worshiping him, that the vomit from his mouth, the poisons coming out of his mouth, which were actually him getting rid of his sins, they looked like flowers being offered to Krishna's feet. And pretty soon he wasn't even vomiting poison anymore. He was vomiting blood. So now he's exhausted. His whole body is broken. And in his mind, he starts to say, Krishna's God, I should surrender. Let's not make Krishna bring us to this point. Sometimes people ask, you know, why do I have to go through difficulties in order to surrender? Have you ever asked yourself this question? Why can't Krishna teach me in a nice way? Well, Krishna is very happy to teach us in a nice way. If we'll learn in a nice way. If as soon as Krishna jumped into the lake, Kali had said, oh, Krishna, I surrender. Kali awaits until he's practically dead to surrender. But that's him. It's not Krishna. So we can surrender joyfully. We can choose to give up our anartas and surrender when Krishna gives a nice little soft hint. Hey, that's an anarta. Give it up. An anarta? It's my pet python. What are you talking about? Isn't it? Another way that we can learn through joy is to wish joy to others. If we want our enemies to learn their lessons through suffering, then we will also learn our lessons through suffering. So if you want to learn our lessons through joy, wish joy for your enemies, wish that your enemies learn their lessons through joy, and also respond to joy. Don't make Krishna have to get so heavy with you that you practically die before you surrender. He never starts like that. Okay, so he starts to accept Krishna as God, but it's only in his mind. He can't speak anymore. He's too exhausted. He's devastated. He's in too much pain. Now, actually, Kali's wives were all devotees. And they had been preaching to their husband for a long time. So they had sown the seed of devotion in his heart, but it couldn't grow because he was so angry. So now that his anger and his sins are gone, this little seed of bhakti that his wives had put there starts to sprout. So when we think of ourselves low, due to sorrow, fear, whenever we feel we're condemned, not in a depressed way, but when we really see ourselves honestly, then our bhakti can actually begin. So, Kali's wife, seeing that he was about to die, started to get involved. Now, they were worried that their husband was going to die at any minute, so they got dressed in a hurry, like what the gopis do to go to the rust tent. So they were all disheveled. They put their makeup on only one eye and their earrings on only one ear, and their clothes were haphazard, just kind of thrown on. And their ornaments were disarrayed. Now, up until this point, they actually didn't care so much if Kali had died or not, because it's not very much fun being married to an envious snake. And they were all Vaishnavis. So when you're a Vaishnavi, especially, it's not fun being married to an envious snake. Then they thought, well, if he dies, that'll be good for Vrindavan. It'll purify Vrindavan, and then we'll just stay in Vrindavan as widows and do our bhajan. But now they saw that Kaliya was becoming a Vaishnava. So now they were thinking, oh, better that he lives. So they put their children in front of them, and then they offer dandavats. It says they offer dandavats on bhuvi, on the ground. So this is, there's another instance in the Bhagavatam with Aditi, where it also says that she offers dandavats. Somehow or other, in our Hare Krishna movement, we stopped having women offer dandavats at some point. And I've never been able to figure out where that came from, that it was stopped. So when Prabhupada was here, he would tell the women to offer dandavats. We'd all offer dandavats in front of him. In fact, if Prabhupada saw women not offering dandavats, he would tell them to offer dandavats. If you go to the temple in Sri Rangam, you will see in the floor, in many, many places, there's stone carvings of a man and a woman next to each other offering dandavats to the Lord, although they don't do it there anymore either. But that's obviously what's in the tradition, and it's in the Bhagavatam. So I don't know, somebody somehow stopped it, and then it became the new norm in ISKCON that only the men were allowed to offer dandavats. But anyway, the Nagapatnis offered their dandavats, and Sanatana Goswami said they couldn't offer them in the water. They must have been offering them either on the bottom of a lake, on the shore, or on an island. It says they offered on the earth. So Kali only had one pride left at this point, and that is, well, at least I own my wives. And now that his wives came and surrendered to Krishna, that was also finished. So now he had nothing left. So as the wives surrendered to Krishna, Kali did too. Now Kali was really listening to the prayers of his wives. So the women have 21 prayers that they offer, 21 verses, and we're not going to discuss those in depth. Those could be a whole, each of those verses obviously could be another class. So in 6 verses, the wives agree to the punishment. So this is an important idea when it comes to if someone we love is suffering or if we're suffering. So first they accept. They say, Krishna, you're equal to everyone. You haven't punished Kali out of animosity. And your punishment is just. It's righteous. It's not unfair. So you don't have any malice and you're not unfair. And actually, Krishna, when your mercy and your punishment are the same. There's no difference. You know, just like the parent, when they give their child a sweet or they give their child medicine, it's the same. Both are loving. So my granddaughter, about a year ago, when she was 9, she had a tooth that was infected. So they had to pull the tooth, and then they were worried that the infection would go into her gums, and so they gave her some mouthwash that she had to use, but it didn't taste very good. So she didn't want to use it. And my son spent, oh, I don't know, an hour, 2 hours trying to argue with her rationally why she should use this. And she refused. So eventually we had to force her. We had to hold her down and put the medicine in her mouth so she wouldn't get a worse infection and so she'd get well. So of course she didn't like that. But that's also loving. It's not that, you know, when we buy her a new dress, that's loving. And when we make her take medicine she doesn't want to take, that we were her enemy. So Krishna's so-called punishment and Krishna's so-called mercy, they're all mercy. They're all love. So that was the next point they made. Then they said that this punishment is actually a benediction. It's actually a blessing. It's not just not punishment. It's not just neutral. It's a blessing. And then they said, Kali must have done both great sins and great piety. He must have done great sins to become a snake and great piety to have you dancing on his head. And they were astonished. How can these two opposite things exist in one person? And Srila Prabhupada very much relates these prayers of the Nagapatnis to the third verse of the Shikshastika, to finding real humility, that Kali had found actual humility. Then in 10 verses, they offer obeisances. They glorify the Lord. So Lord Brahma says this, Tattenu Kampam Sukshamakshamanam, that when we have suffering, if we glorify the Lord more, if we accept the suffering as his mercy and glorify the Lord more, just by doing that, one will go back to God. Back to God. Dayabak, one will inherit the kingdom of God. And then 5 verses, they made a request. They said, please excuse Kali. If he dies, we're going to be in trouble. Another snake is going to come and try to marry us. Now that this snake has become nice, better we stay with him. And they said, whatever contamination is left, please erase that with nectar instead of poison. This is the way we should always request Krishna for those who've harmed us. Whatever contamination is there, please erase it with nectar instead of poison. That's the essence of forgiveness. They also said, Kali is also your offspring. He's also one of the jivas. And they said, this is very important, we'll do whatever you like. We're just making a request. It's not a demand. We'll do whatever you like. And you don't need to worry that we, because they were also snake-like beings, that we're going to harm anybody here in your Vrindavan. And Krishna said, although I'm angry, your prayers are like the rain and the monsoon that can put out a forest fire. And now I no longer feel angry. So then Krishna jumped off. He released Kaliya, who was unconscious, who had been unconscious, or, as Sanatana Goswami says, maybe was in a state of ecstasy. And Kaliya came back to consciousness. Now, he couldn't offer dandavats. He wanted to, but he couldn't, because his body was all bruised and in pain. So all he could do was just kind of offer namaskars. And he was so exhausted, he couldn't make up his own prayers. So what he did, he had been listening to his wife's prayers, so he just kind of paraphrased them. And then he said, my dear Lord, as a snake, in this body of a snake, I have an angry and envious nature. And I was attached to something temporary. Please forgive me. So Madhvacharya comments on this connection. He said, one who simply thinks with devotion, the punishment which the Supreme Lord is exerting upon me is actually mercy towards me, becomes pious. But for those who continue, even after punishment from the Lord, to envy him, their attitude is the reason for their continuing to fail to recognize him. So we want to recognize Krishna even in the difficulties of our life. We should thank him even for those difficulties. So Kaliya said, I can only give up my nature by your mercy. Please excuse me for this nature I have acquired. And then he also surrenders like his wives. He said, you can punish me, you can save me, whatever you like. You can do whatever you like. So then Krishna gives blessings. He says, take your possessions, your families, and leave this place immediately. And he told the people on the bank, please recite this and repeat this for everybody to hear, so everyone knows that Kali is leaving. Krishna said, I free you from your offense to Garuda and from your offense to Vrindavan. So as we said before, the residents of Vrindavan, they never want anyone thrown out of Vrindavan. But Krishna wanted to show that although Kaliya was released from his offenses, he couldn't live in Vrindavan anymore. Now he was a snake and he was always going to give off some poison. And he said to Kaliya, please don't be upset with me for giving you some pain. I had to protect my cows. Then Kaliya and his wives worshiped Krishna with garments and ornaments and flowers and fruit. And Kaliya gave Krishna a valuable ruby and a pearl necklace. And Kaliya's wives gave Krishna his Kaustubha jewel. So this is when he gets his Kaustubha jewel. And then Kaliya says, instead of being envious of Garuda, I'd like to become the servant of Garuda. So this would make Krishna very happy. And he said, you know, I'd like to carry you sometimes too, like my brother. So sometimes when Krishna manifests, he doesn't go to Mathura on a Kura's chariot. He goes in the Jamuna. Just like you can take a boat ride from Vrindavan to Mathura in the Jamuna. So sometimes Kaliya carries Krishna in the Yamuna from Vrindavan to Mathura. Then Krishna heals Kaliya. Now, it's also in the fight between Krishna and Jambavan. At the end, Krishna takes his hand and mitigates all of Jambavan's pains. So Krishna then takes his hands and heals Kaliya. And at this point, both Krishna and Kaliya are worshipable, just like we also worship the Kazi in Navadvip. So whatever one may have been, once they surrender to Krishna, they are also worshipable. So then all the snakes leave. Now, one reason Kaliya couldn't stay in Vrindavan is he never took shelter of the residents of Vrindavan. Then the Jamuna immediately became pure. Then Krishna comes out of the lake. Now, maybe he was standing on the hood of one of the serpent servants of Kaliya and came out dramatically that way. And when he came out, he was all decorated. He was decorated with chandan and covered with gold. from head to toe in jewels. And then everyone on the bank, they felt that they had recovered their life and they stood up. Sudama wanted to embrace Krishna first, but he felt such respect he couldn't even pick up his hands. The only person who didn't stand immediately when Krishna came out of the lake was Yasoda. She only stood once Krishna was right next to her. And then she stood up and she just pressed Krishna to her chest and she felt she had achieved her goal of life. So then Krishna was with Yasoda and all the women were around him, but Nanda Maharaj went right in among the women and he came and gave Krishna a hug. And then the trees came back to life all around the lake. And either the original trees came back to life or new sprouts grew up and new trees grew up. It was immediately forest and flowers. And then Balaram hugs Krishna and laughs and he looks him over to see, are you okay? Any bruises anywhere? Any scratches anywhere? And the cows and the bulls and the calves, they're all dancing. Just like if you've seen the photos or you've been there when they let the cows out in the spring at Bhaktivedanta Manor and they're all dancing. So all the cows are dancing. And then the brahmanas were giving blessings to everyone. And they asked for charity. You know, give me some charity. All blessings, all blessings. And they had a big festival. So Nanda Maharaj was giving charity. Yasoda put Krishna on her lap and was crying without stopping. And after the end of a big festival, it was a long day. So they didn't go back to the village. They moved a little bit away from the lake. And they stayed there for night. So questions, comments? Yes. Yeah, you have to talk a little loudly with the distraction too. I want to thank you all for being very tolerant and happy with the distractions of the children. It made me very happy to see you. Sorry that children act like children. You don't need to be sorry that children act like children. That's their dharma. It's a dharma of children to be noisy, dirty, disruptive, and uncontrolled. That's what they do. If they didn't do that, they wouldn't be children. Yes, no problem. We were all children. We may be children again. I hope that if I'm a child again on this earth, I get to be in a community like this. You know, if we're always pushing the children out of the way, you know, so if every time you come to a program, everybody says, get out, get out, get out. And then one day when you're 18, you say, okay, goodbye. Mm-hmm. All right, Krishna. So yes, you want me to talk a little louder?
Sure. Yeah, as an extra question, Krishna, one of his qualities is to dress really nicely. And I just wanted you to just describe that belt, like he wears his, I mean, how... Yeah, if you could just say a bit more about the belt.
I don't know. Which belt he had on that day. Well, sometimes they're cloth, like a sash. And sometimes they're made out of jewels, so there's different kinds of cloths. But I don't know which one he was wearing that day. Maybe someday we'll see that, huh? In transcendental television in our heart. Yes.
Going to the residents of Vrindavan and all of Krishna's relatives and friends had so much anxiety watching or seeing this. They also suffered lots of anxiety with other, you know, when the other demons came and the forest fire and so on. Was that anxiety, you know, they're fainting, it's uncontrolled. But was it also... Did it also have a tinge of bliss to it?
Not tinge. It is bliss. Just like they have these ice cream shops that have 31 flavors of ice cream. Hmm. Right? If bliss is only bliss, that's boring. So the best analogy I can give is what do we do for entertainment? Do we, materially speaking, do we sometimes find anxiety entertaining? Correct? Yes. Or you know, action books and movies and spies and or even horror movies, which never appeal to me. But people like to be in anxiety. It's fun. I don't know what percentage of movies and books put people into anxiety, but it's a lot. So why do people go out of their way? They're peaceful at home. Why do they put on an anxiety-inducing movie? Why do they do that? Because it's fun. There's some pleasure. I mean, it's not much fun because it's a perversion of the rasas we're trying to enjoy separately from Krishna, but you can have some idea. It's exciting. Now, it wouldn't be fun if you were actually experiencing it. You know, if there were really people shooting guns in your living room, it wouldn't be fun. If there was really a monster trying to take over the world, you know, it wouldn't really actually be fun. So what makes it fun is that you're also safe. You're having two things going on at the same time. You're sitting in your living room, you're safe, but you're getting entertainment. You're even reading a book, you know. You can become absorbed in the book. I felt fear and anxiety from reading the story in the book. The Goloka Vrindavan and Gokula Vrindavan, they're not boring places. There's variety. So there's all variety of emotions, but they're all ecstatic. I mean, like you could say to somebody, you know, did you like the movie? Yeah, it was such a great movie. I loved it. Does that make any sense? But we do that all the time. So we have some idea that anxiety, grief, fear are also pleasurable. There's 12 rasas. So one of them is comedy, but one of them is anger. One of them is ghastliness. And Prabhupada said there's nothing outside of these 12 rasas. So when we're trying to enjoy them materially, they're not really that pleasurable. When we try to enjoy them with Krishna, they're only pleasurable. So it's not a tinge of bliss, it's pure bliss. Or just like even food, there's 6 tastes: sweet, salty, sour, bitter, pungent, and astringent. Don't we like bitter things? Sometimes we like to eat something that's bitter. One of my grandchildren said, does Krishna especially like sweets just like we do? So I said, yeah. I said, in fact, you know, Goloka Vrindavan is called Madhurya, sweetness. And there's the conjugal rasa is called the Madhurya rasa, the sweet rasa. And we have that wonderful song, Madhurama Kimam Madhurama, right? Krishna is the Lord of all sweetness. So we usually use the word sweet in reference to Krishna. But Krishna likes all the tastes. I mean, who would like a meal that was only sweets? So are you going to say that something that's salty is not pleasurable because it's not sweet? You don't have to put sugar in every preparation for it to be pleasurable. You know, you can have something that's spicy that's pleasurable, or that's salty, or that's bitter, or that's astringent even. Persimmons. Do you ever have persimmons here in this country? So they're astringent. But they're also very tasty. So in the same way, you know, then there's those 6 main tastes, and then there's so many varieties, so many different kinds of sweetness, and so many different kinds of salty, and so many different... And it's each of them a little pleasurable, or green apples, you know? Why does somebody like green apples? So it's a different taste. There are things made with lemons. That's also pleasurable. You're not going to say, well, maybe there's a little tinge of pleasure. No, it's a lot of pleasure. It's just a different variety. And why is this anxiety giving them so much pleasure? Because it's increasing their love. It's making them feel, it's making them aware of the intensity of their love, higher and higher and higher and higher and higher, to an almost unbearable limit. So if we can think about some time when we really felt in love, I mean, even the material poets, it's interesting. Oh, what's the name of this poet? I can't remember. I have it on my computer. And he talks about love. He says, you know, if it's so wonderful, why is it killing me? And if it's killing me, why is it so wonderful? So Rupa Goswami also talks about like this. He says, you don't know if poison or nectar is being poured on your head. It's a famous song of Mirabai's. He said, if I knew love would hurt so much, I never would have loved. So there's this opposition of intense pain and intense love. Actually, one of my devotee friends just sent me a quote from some Christian saint, and she was talking about that. She was talking about that in her ecstasies of love of God, she felt like it was unbearable bliss and unbearable pain at the same time. Does that help? Yes.
I heard that Kaliya took refuge in that particular part of Yamuna to stay away from Garuda in relation to a curse.
Yes.
So what was the reason for that curse? And the other thing is that being half-brothers, why was their relationship so bad?
Why was their relationship so bad even though they were half-brothers? It happens sometimes. Also, birds and snakes are naturally and have natural enmity with each other. Because Kasyapa Muni, he's directed, to answer your second question first, Kasyapa Muni is directed to, through his wives, who are all demigods, they're not humans, to create all the different species throughout the universe. So the different wives, some of them create beasts, and some of them create birds, and some of them create insects, and some of them, this is described mostly in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam. So even though all of these species are all ultimately brothers, they all have the same father. And although they have different mothers, the majority of Kasyapa's wives are also sisters. They're the daughters of Daksha. I don't think all of them are the daughters of Daksha. Most of them are sisters. So they're all related to each other. But still, it's populating the universe with living entities, and many of those living entities are also natural enemies of each other, although they're related. What was the curse? The curse was that there was a sage, Shobari Muni, who was meditating in the water, and he got attached to the fish in the water. And when Garuda came and ate the fish, he cursed Garuda, if you come back to this lake, you'll die. So, of course, Garuda couldn't be cursed by any Muni, and he wasn't subject to dying. But out of respect for the Muni, he didn't go back there. So Kali knew about this curse, and he knew if I go to this lake, that Garuda won't mess with me. Anything else? Yes?
Sorry. So we touched on how you were saying that surrendering can also be quite painful or involve suffering sometimes.
Well, let's say that suffering things may induce us to surrender.
Yeah. And also, and then how we're talking about, like, we're actually hugging on to the tree with saying let go. So, in one sense, you're saying that we're definitely causing our own unhappiness and we're so attached and holding on. But at the same time, Krishna clearly says that we have no control over the modes.
Yeah, but you're putting yourself in that position. Just like if somebody drinks alcohol or takes some kind of drug, that intoxicant starts to control them more or less, depending on how strong the intoxicant is and how much of it they've taken. But they voluntarily put themselves under the control of the intoxicant. I mean, in ordinary life, people don't come up to you and forcibly give you intoxicants. I mean, it happens in some situations, but generally speaking, to most of us, that doesn't happen. Or my example I'm giving of watching, if you watch a movie, or you read a book. So you choose to buy the book and read it, but then once you're reading the book, you're absorbed in the book and the or the film, and the author or the director is then manipulating your emotions. No, not in some sense. Entirely. 100%.
So how do I see that? Because I don't see that.
Do you want to see?
Yes.
Then you will. If we want to see it, we will see it. That's all. Prabhupada says, the unfortunate materialist can get out of illusion simply by desiring to do so. If you're really willing to see the truth, you will see it. Why don't we want to see that I am an illusion? Because I want to be an illusion. I mean, Arjuna had the same problem. He said to Krishna, what is it that makes us do sinful activities as if against our will, as if by force? And when I first read that when I was in college, that verse was at the bottom of the page. I turned the page and Krishna says, it's lust and lust only. So there's two things with seeing that we're holding on to it. One is it's very embarrassing. Hey, I'm Krista. I mean, if you really see that all of our trouble and all of our suffering and all of our illusion is something I am holding on to voluntarily, every single bit of it, that's very embarrassing. And it's very liberating, because if I'm holding on to it, guess what I can do? I can let go. So if I'm a victim, I don't need to be embarrassed. I don't need to be humble. If I'm a victim, I can maintain my false pride. It's not me. I'm just victimized. And ultimately, victimized by whom? I must be victimized ultimately by Krishna. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya dharaji. It's his energy. So it must be his fault. Now, how am I going to get any humility? But if I'm a victim, then I can't do anything to fix it. Then I just have to wait for some kind of magic that may or may not fall whimsically on my head. From this whimsical God who put me into suffering for who knows nothing, no fault of mine, and who's just going to take it away through no fault of mine. Now, Krishna did put me into illusion, but because I asked for it. You know, your child wants a toy, and he's screaming, and you give him a toy. I want to be an illusion! It won't be good for you. I want to be an illusion. Please don't do that. You won't like it. No, I want to be. Okay, there you go. Don't blame me. I mean, why are people selling drugs? Because somebody buys them. There's a demand. Why are people making computer games and movies and books? Because people want them. So, you know, I'm tired of life. I want to be in an illusion. So, you know, I choose to pay my money to buy the computer game. I choose to pay my money to watch the film. I choose to pay my money to read the book. And then I'm carried away by it. And then when the director of the movie has decided, at this point people will laugh, I laugh. At this point people will cry, and I'll cry. And I'm manipulated, and I'm just carried on the waves. We've all experienced this, right? I'm not the only one, right? But I paid for it. I wanted it. I walked into the theater. I picked up the book. It wasn't forced on me. Nobody tied me up and bound me and threw me in the movie theater and said, you know, here be an illusion. Now, I do have to get Krishna's... Krishna does have to remove the illusion. I can't remove it by myself. I think it would also... like these rides at amusement parks. You've seen these rides, like the roller coaster? So you have to want the ride. And again, no one's just going to come and kidnap you on the street and say, you must ride the roller coaster. You go to the amusement park and you see the ride and you want to ride it and you pay your money. But that's not enough. Someone has to put you in the ride. And they lock you in. Well, they have to lock you in, otherwise you'd fall out at the top of the thing and die. So they lock you in. But you want it to be locked in. And again, it's designed. At this point in the ride, you're going to scream. At this point in the ride, you're going to be afraid. And you are. And then when you're finished with the ride, they have to unlock you. You can't unlock yourself. If you can unlock yourself, you unlock yourself at the top of the thing. So they have to, you go, it's too scary. So they have to unlock you. So Krishna has to put us into illusion, and Krishna has to take us out of illusion. I cannot put myself into illusion on my own, and I cannot get myself out of illusion on my own. But Krishna is responding to my desire out of kindness. I want to be God, but I can't be God. It's not possible. It can't happen in reality. So Krishna could put me just into suspended animation. He does that too. In the body of Mahavishnu, we stay there for a long time, just kind of in suspended animation. And then eventually he says, okay, try again. But the only way we can try to be God is to be an illusion. So anyway, if you really want to see the truth, ask Krishna to show you the truth, and then be willing to see it. It's not pretty. You'll cry. And you don't have to tell anybody else about it. But you'll cry. You'll grieve. But it's a grieving out of love. You're not just grieving. It's not just to say, oh, I'm so fallen, I'm so little, I'm so terrible, you stay in my bed all night. But seeing how we voluntarily wanted to be an illusion, when it's part of reestablishing our relationship with Krishna, it's very blissful. And by analogy, I'm sure that each of us has done something or said something in our life to hurt somebody we care about. Has everybody done that? And if you actually see it, I mean, sometimes we don't want to see it. Someone says, you know, you did this, it really hurt me. And we just say, oh, I'm sorry. But sometimes that's not enough. You know, I had someone who I really cared about who told me, hey, you know, you really did something that hurt me. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. And the person said, that's not enough. What are you sorry for? I'm sorry you felt bad. I'm sorry you felt upset. And that's not enough. What are you sorry for? What did you do? And then I had to really think, well, what did I do? I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to think about what I did. Because it was embarrassing. So silly. The other person already knew what I did, of course. I did it to them. And I already knew what I did too. I was the one who did it. So who was I trying to hide from? And Krishna already knows. I mean, it's just so foolish. But it was hard. And finally I decided my relationship with this person is more important than my pride. It was scary. I did this, and I did this, and I did this, and I did that. And it was a mistake, and I shouldn't have done those things. And you know, after I wrote that, guess how I felt? You know how I felt. I felt relief. And because the other person actually cares about me, then they were actually able to forgive me. So it wasn't just that I was looking at this by myself in my room grieving. I was looking at it in relationship to the person that I want to be with. So we're seeing how we're holding on to illusion. Why? So we can let go of it and be with our dear friend Krishna again. Not just so we can think how terrible we are. There's no use to that. That's just about ignorance. There's no value. So if you're willing to see it, and be willing to see it, and be willing to let go of it. So we're holding on to this anartha. And if you want Krishna to show you, he'll show you. You'll see, as Prabhupada puts it, the naked form of material desires. You'll see, oh, it's not a pet, it's a python. That's hard because we've been thinking it's a pet, but it is such a relief. Oh, I can finally get rid of this python. Now, we don't get rid of it. Again, Krishna has to remove the illusion. So we're holding on to it, and Krishna will show you. This is your anartha, and you are holding on to it. Now, I'm sure all of us have had Krishna show us stuff, right? Then all of a sudden Krishna shows you, you're being envious. You're being proud. You're being this. So many times what we do is when Krishna shows us, we just say, oh, no, I don't want that. Have you tried to do that, and then it comes back? Have you tried to do that? And Krishna shows you, you're being proud. No, I don't want to be proud. But no, what you have to do is you have to look at it and say, oh, I want to be proud. I am wanting right now to be proud. I'm taking shelter of pride. I am relishing pride. I am enjoying pride. Look at what I'm doing. And you look at it and you see it. And you see its real form. And then you go, oh my God, what am I holding on to? I don't want to hold on to this anymore. As soon as you say, I don't want to hold on to this anymore. But you can't say, I don't want to hold on to it if you're not holding on to it. And think about how you feel about people who offended you. What do you want them to do? You want them to own what they did. Correct? There's people who've hurt me and offended me. What do I want them to do? I want them to take responsibility and say, I chose to do that. I chose to say that. I chose that knowingly. Some people you say, please don't do this. And they do it. And what do you want them to say? You want them to say, I did this even though you told me not to. Even though you told me that it was going to upset you, and I knew it was going to upset you, I still did it out of my own selfishness. Because only then can they stop, isn't it? Only when you really understand what you're doing wrong can you stop doing it. But that's part of the relationship. Is that all right? And the main way to get the courage to see this stuff is to really want a relationship with Krishna. And the main way to really want a relationship with Krishna is to hear about Krishna and say, I'd like to be there. In Vrindavan, I'd like to see Krishna dance on the heads of Kaliya. I mean, the fireworks dance in Russia is pretty cool. You know, it is nothing compared to Krishna dancing on the heads of Kaliya. And to want it enough that I'm willing to look at the stuff in my heart. Yes?
Sometimes it's very hard to tell somebody like that. When you're facing enemy from another person or another devotee, like if you're doing a service or anything you're doing, but it is sometimes
So therefore, you don't have to jump into Kali's lake. You can ask Krishna to do it. Well, that's something else.
You either move away from the service, or you stop quietly, and that will become a illusion.
That's too deep for us to discuss this later. There are solutions, but I don't think I can answer that in less than 15, 20 minutes. I'll just give you some sutras. We're not always right and the other person isn't always wrong. We think I'm 100% right, they're 100% wrong. That may not be true. Good thing to think about. Try to understand the other person's motivation. Try to have empathy for their point of view and their motives. See if you can find a way to negotiate, and sometimes you have to avoid. But sulking is never a good option. maybe a combination of those. Maybe, and sometimes you can avoid and empathize and look in your own heart. Sometimes you do all three. That's just little sutras. Each one of those would be a couple hours. So I think we should stop now, and we'll have our last class on Lila tomorrow morning on Brahma stealing the boys and calves. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Lest your devotees ki. Your love for the next generation of devotees ki.
The noisy ones.
The noisy ones.
It's so good we have so many of them, though. It's nice to have them.